The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Flypod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Today, well, we're with the author of Bygone Badass Broads, 52 Forgotten Women Who Changed the World, Mackenzie Lee. Mackenzie, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Bygone Badass Broads, I mean, if I saw that on the bookshelf, I'd pick that up just for the title.
Good. So let's hope other people feel the same way.
So how did you come up with this title?
Through brainstorming alliterations, basically. I originally wanted to call the series something like Women You Should Know About But Probably Don't, or something like that. And or I think I called it Badass Ladies of History You Should Probably Know About But Don't. And that was too long because it started on Twitter. And so that would take up like most of the tweets. So I needed something a little punchier and shorter. So a friend of mine and I just texted back and forth for a while, browsing these sort of alliterative names, and landed on that. And I'm pretty happy with it.
Now, you know, I'm not the brightest star in the sky, so I had some other people look at this book, and they were looking at the people that you write about in here, women that we probably should know about but don't. And maybe the most somebody came up with was maybe three women.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that?
Well, I think for a long time, we have had systems in place that have kept women from having voices and sharing their stories and from sort of being present in the historical narrative. And I think even in our modern day, we sort of perpetuate this myth that women in history were always oppressed and had no sort of identity outside of that oppression and outside of the confines of their gender, which is untrue. But we sort of tell ourselves this over and over again because it's easier than rewriting our history and retraining our brains into different thought patterns. So we're sort of in this great moment where there's a lot of really accessible, really awesome pop culture-y women's history books that are coming out right now that are sort of giving the narratives back to these women and putting them back in history where they belong. And it's fantastic. And I'm so, so excited to be part of it.
You know, one of my favorite reads about this book was about this Indian lady, and she had something to do with Custard's Last Stand.
Yeah.
And, you know, you never hear that in the history books.
Yeah. So she was a Native American woman named Buffalo Calf Road Warrior, and she was actually the one who knocked Custer from his horse at Custer's Last Stand. And her story was kept quiet by her. I don't remember specifically what indigenous tribe she's part of, but her story was kept quiet until very, very recently, like in the 2000s. And so that's a story that has only come to light in recent years. And now it's up to us to sort of keep that in the narrative and to keep her in that narrative.
Yeah, it was with the Cheyenne tribe. And of course, the Lakota Sioux was the tribe that fought Custer, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I guess that they combined tribes.
See, you've read the book so much more recently than I have. I have not looked at it since I turned it in several months ago, so it's probably fresher in your mind.
Well, I don't know. Well, my wife's Lakota Sioux, so.
Oh, perfect. There you go. That tends to stick in your brain, then, when you have the personal connection like that.
Yeah, and, you know, to go be able to travel up to South Dakota, maybe to the Rosebud Indian Reservation, and just see how depressed that is, and how basically the white person really did the, you'll say indigenous, I say the Indian people wrong, unfortunately. But that was kind of cool. Now, how did somebody find out about the lady that knocked Custer off his horse? I mean,
so I think
that'd be covered up.
Well, so my understanding is that she was a part of Native oral traditions, and her story was sort of passed down, but it wasn't opened up beyond sort of the tribal storytelling and tribal oratory history. So she's only sort of now joining the collective consciousness about history and about that conflict.
A couple ladies from Vietnam.
Yeah.
Who really started, goodness sakes, some real changes in Vietnam. Huh?
Yeah, they were a long time ago. It's like, I don't remember the exact dates. But they were two sisters who were instrumental in leading the first sort of uprising against the Chinese, who had control of Vietnam at the time. And they led an uprising that was very grassroots and very much like, tell your neighbors, we're all going to rally and we're all going to fight, and very much a people's revolution. It was one of the first, I think it was the first successful challenge to Chinese authority in Vietnam. And then these two women, I hope I say them right, because a lot of these names I've never actually said out loud, Trung Trac and Trung Nhi. And then they ended up ruling the country for, I think, about a year and a half before the Chinese unfortunately came back with better armies. But it was an incredible feat that their sort of people's army rose up to defeat this military power that had been in control of their country for so long.
Well, you're doing a lot better with the names than I would. A lot of these names, I don't even know if I could pronounce. Not only are they people from the United States, but as the title says, they're 52 forgotten women who changed the world. So mm-hmm. they are people throughout the world.
Yeah, it was really, really important to me going into working on this book to reflect not only the diversity of Western women, but women from all over the world, and also all over time and all over different subject matter too. And so when my editor and I first started working on the table of contents for this book, we had a huge spreadsheet with all these different names of all these different women that I've just sort of collected over the years. And we mapped out everyone's race and where they were from and what year they lived and what their religion and their sexuality and their gender identity and their area of interest or expertise, and then sort of narrowed it down from there. And so there are women who didn't end up in this book because, like, I was like, we got too many Americans, we got to cut some of the Americans and things like that. Because I really wanted to make sure that it was a global perspective and reflected the diversity that you don't always get to see in history.
So that must have been a whole lot of research.
Yes.
How much?
A lot. It's hard to quantify because this is a project I feel like I've been working on for much, much longer than the sort of like actual commitment of like butt in chair writing the words that went into this book. These are some of these stories I've known since I was a kid and have sort of held on to them and repeated them and retold them because I thought they were interesting. Some I've learned more recently. Some I learned while specifically looking for this and seeking out stories for this book. So it's something in a way I feel like I've been working on my whole life, and then also something that I started working on a couple of years ago when I started this series on Twitter.
Bygone Badass Broads, 52 Forgotten Women Who Changed the World. The book hasn't been out all that long. Have you gotten emails or have you talked to people that have read the book and they've said, you know, why didn't you do this person or this person? And could there be another book?
Oh, yeah, that's part of the really fun thing about being very vocally passionate about a subject is that everyone will send you stuff relating to it. So if you tell enough people that you really love women in history, and if you're writing a book about it, every time anyone uncovers an interesting woman in history, they send it to me. It's great. I got all my friends really well trained. And so as I've been doing events over these last couple of weeks promoting the book, the same thing happens with the readers who come to the events, and they want to share these stories with me. Lots of them are like local heroes or people they've found in their own research. And by people, I mean women. And they want to tell me these stories and they want to share. And obviously, like, I have hundreds of women just in my brain that I could have put in this book, but we had to limit it. And so I'd love to do more. There are so many more stories to tell, and everybody's got that one woman in history who's like really important to them and who they just hold very close to their heart. So
Bygone Badass Broads, who is probably your favorite badass broad in this book?
No, that's the worst question.
Oh, it's like throwing the baby out, right?
It is. It's like whichever one I'm talking about in the moment is the one that I think is my favorite. I didn't do any of the art in this book. It's done by a wonderful artist named Petra Erickson, and it's beautiful. And I love like flipping through it and just looking at the art. And every portrait I see when I'm flipping through it, I'm like, oh, she's my favorite. She's my actual favorite. And then I turn to the next one. I'm like, no, actually, I think she is my favorite. Because they're all just like insanely cool women in their own way. If I have to pick not so much a favorite, but one that I feel is very sort of topical or something that I think about quite a lot in this past sort of year and a half we've had politically, where a lot of people feel very unsettled and unsafe and just sort of on edge. I think a lot about a woman named Irina Sendler, and she was a nurse in Warsaw during the Nazi occupation, and she was allowed to go into the Jewish ghetto. She was one of the few non-Jews who was allowed in there, and she used this position of like tremendous power and privilege to smuggle thousands and thousands of Jewish children out of the Warsaw ghetto. And she was just like nonstop in the work she did. And I often think of her in terms of both using my place of privilege to help other people, and also her just like steadfast refusal to normalize tyranny and to not stand up to hate and oppression. And I think about her a lot. And also her story was discovered by a group of high school girls several years ago who were doing a National History Day project and really brought to light by them. And I think that's also like such a wonderful example of how we need to be finding these stories, and we need to be telling these stories, and we need to be repeating them and making sure that the next generation that we're teaching our history to doesn't forget these women.
52 women in here, their stories. How did you come up with the order of the ladies?
So they're ordered chronologically by their date of birth. So it's pretty easy.
Yeah, you know, when I was going through that, it seemed like that was probably the case.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really exactly for sure. The layout in this book I really like, mainly because I'm just a mess and I like to just flip through pages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can look at one lady and the stories are fairly short.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's about two pages plus a picture. And I can do that. You know, I can do several a day.
Mm-hmm. And you feel so accomplished because you read several different stories in one day. And you're like, look at all this new stuff I learned in one day.
Yeah. And then I can think, you know, wow, they've really done a lot. And I haven't really done much with my life.
But yeah. Also that you get the like crippling self-loathing over how little you've done.
Yeah.
Especially when you read the stories about like when I would research these stories and find women that I'm like, wow, this is such an incredible life. And then the line would be like, and she did all this before she was 16. And it's like, well, what am I doing with my life?
So how much time would you say you spent per woman on research?
Oh, gosh, that's impossible to say. Every one of them is different because some of them have a lot of sources available and a lot of stuff sort of in the public domain about them. Some of the women have primary sources, diaries and writings that are in their own voice that you can read. And others, we don't even know what their name was for sure. So it really depended on the woman, and it depended on the story and the sources that were available.
I think the diaries might be kind of neat to read because you're right at that moment.
Yeah.
Right, what they were thinking, right? What they were doing.
Yeah. They're super interesting. They're also sometimes punishingly boring. Because even when you're a badass lady in history, not every moment of your life is really interesting.
Well, I would have thought different of that.
I don't know.
Mackenzie, this is book number 3 for you. Is that correct?
It is.
Tell me a little bit about the other 2 books that you've written.
So this is my first nonfiction book. The other 2 are both historical fiction novels geared sort of towards young adults, but able to be enjoyed by any age. I was a history major in college. I've always really liked history, but was not destined to be an academic for many reasons, part of which is that I have a short attention span when it comes to reading and writing nonfiction, which is part of the reason the biographies in this book are so short and digestible. And also because I really, when I was working on my history degree, wanted to be writing papers that read like novels, basically. I wanted to be writing Richard III paced his tower angrily, brooding over the princes, and my professors were like, you can't do that. So instead, I decided to write historical fiction. So my first book is called This Monstrous Thing. It's a reimagining of Frankenstein set in a hyper-industrialized 1818 Switzerland. And the second book is called The Gentleman's Guide to Vice and Virtue. It is a sort of queer spin on the classic adventure novel. So, yeah, they all fit really well together in that they're all history, and they're all sort of focused on people in history that don't usually get spotlights in our sort of popular narratives.
So when you go with those YNA books, historical novels, you are maybe looking at what life was like back then. You probably already, there was no cell phones or anything like that. But during your research, did you find things that maybe you didn't know that's like, ah, that's kind of cool. I'll just incorporate it here.
Oh my gosh, constantly. Writing historical fiction is just constantly discovering new and interesting things that you want to include, and then having to cut them out because they just weigh down your book. So it's always kind of a give and take, and historical fiction often feels like an iceberg where just this tiny little tip ends up in the book, and then there's this enormous amount of really interesting work and research that goes into it that nobody ever sees. So I just like corner people at parties and force them to listen to me talk about how interesting like Mary Shelley was.
So what was your Frankenstein like?
My Frankenstein?
Yes.
So my Frankenstein is a steampunk Frankenstein. So it is all centered around industrialization and sort of the 1800s equivalent of artificial intelligence and the line between man and machine. So yeah, it's all sort of classic Frankenstein except with industrialized monster, mechanical monster.
So with today on the news, and I mean, it's everywhere, AI, I mean, that could take over the world one day, couldn't it? Couldn't that be just like your Frankenstein?
Right. I think so. And that's actually part of the reason I think we're still reading Frankenstein 200 years later is Mary Shelley, when she wrote this book, was very much pulling from sort of the anxieties of her time and this sort of fear that was rising out of the Enlightenment of where do we draw the line between man and God and how does science make men more powerful than this creator that had traditionally been believed in. And so, yeah, I think it's a book that is still very, very relevant. And it's interesting how, in spite of the fact that there's 200 years, this is the 200th anniversary of the publication of Frankenstein, there's 200 years between us and that narrative, and it is still just like startlingly relevant.
So today with artificial intelligence, where do you see it going?
I am not the person to ask about this.
You're a writer.
I write a history. I look backwards. I don't look forwards.
All right. So Bygone Badass Broads, this your brand new book. What was it like getting away from the YNA books to a book like this?
Working on this book was such a joyful process because I loved reading these stories and sort of uncovering new layers to women who I already knew were interesting, but then became more and more interesting the more I got to know them and the more I got to know their stories. And also, I love historical fiction. It's always fun to like make up stuff in a historical context, but there's nothing quite like finding real stories, especially real stories that are stranger and crazier and way more interesting than anything you could drum up.
Although with this book, you couldn't have King Richard brooding across.
I know. It's still very much like this book is very much written in my voice, which is a very casual, sort of chatty, conversational, sarcastic voice. And so I wanted it to be very accessible. I wanted it to be a book for people like me who sometimes have a hard time with nonfiction because it feels dry and boring. So maybe Richard III is not brooding in his tower, but there's still like very modern references and some fun wordplay in the book. So,
you know, what I liked about this book, what I loved about it, was the way that the words were put together sometimes by you. I mean, it's like coming right out of your head. You're just saying this or that, and it's like, well, that's kind of funny.
Well, thank you.
Now, you tried for the humor in that, I'm sure.
I do try. I try and then generally read over it after I've written it and I'm like, oh no, this is not funny at all. Nobody's gonna think this is funny. So I'm glad you think it's funny. That's sort of the goal.
Oh, I thought it was. There
Good.
Were parts in here. It's like, that's funny.
Good. It's been interesting having some family and friends of mine read it because I've had a lot of them send me pictures of specific lines in the book and be like, this is such a Mackenzie joke. Be like, this is so you. And I was like, I know, I wrote the book. So.
Does that sometimes go over people's heads?
Oh yeah, for sure. There's definitely jokes in this. Like there's a deep dive reference to the Disney animated Robin Hood in this book that is like my most favorite movie of all time that I'm sure like 90% of people will not get. My copy editor didn't get it and she was trying to like correct the grammar on it and I was like, no, you don't understand. This is a direct quote from Disney animated Robin Hood. It needs to stay intact.
Well, with your historical novels, you're putting together the scene, it's the scene within reason of the 1800s or whatever year mm-hmm. you're going to, a little bit different than Bygone Badass Broads? Or is it the same paintbrush?
No, it's definitely a different tool set because Bygone Badass Broads is taking the real lives of real people, trying to find out as much as you can, and then sort of condensing that narrative into two pages of... It's like a highlights reel almost. Whereas with historical fiction, you're tending to look more in depth at sort of a day-by-day life and situation of an imagined person. So you're imagining something in a real historical context, whereas with these short essays of women in history, there are correct answers out there, and there are real facts that you have to uncover and then decide which are the sort of most essential to include in the book so that the reader can understand and follow the narrative. So it's definitely a different process.
So which do you like the best?
Oh, I don't want to choose. I like whichever one I'm doing at the time. Whatever had, I know I'm not answering any of your questions about favorites. You can't bait me into picking favorites.
I'll try one more time before this is over.
I really like doing them both. Like, I think historical fiction is so fun because I love like playing around with history and being able to be more creative and imagining situations in this real historical context. But I also love writing nonfiction for the reason I mentioned before, which is that real life is so much crazier than we can invent. And that's such a cool thing. And so it's so cool to find these stories, and especially to find these stories of women who have been largely erased from our sort of mainstream historical narratives, and then use that to sort of prove all these ideas we have about the only people who ever made history being like white, straight, cis guys, and prove all that wrong.
So what is your favorite genre, maybe?
You're doing the favorite again. It's so unfair.
One more time. Okay, so maybe what do you like to read? How is that?
Oh, that's okay. I love reading historical fiction, actually. I'm not a great nonfiction reader. I have a hard time with a lot of it because I do find it kind of difficult to get through. So historical fiction always has been a really good access point for me to this subject that I'm very interested in. I love learning about history as sort of an individual lived experience, even if that individual is a fictitious one. I think that's the best way and the most interesting way for me to approach it. So I do really, really love historical fiction.
So how did you get involved with writing? That seems like, because, you know, we have short stories here.
Yeah.
You'd like that. Although writing novels and, well, let's just go historical novels, that seems like it's a lot larger of a project to just sit there and do.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Sometimes I'm like, this was a terrible idea and I should never have started doing this because it's a lot of work.
Should have been a banker, right?
Yeah, so much easier. Something low stress like finance. So I got into writing because I was a kid who liked books. I don't think I was a very good reader. I read a lot of Star Wars novels, and also like read the same books over and over again because it was familiar and it was easy for me. And then once I hit a point where I was sort of told, I aged out of children's books and was sort of told, you need to go read adult stuff now, because YA was not super a thing at the time, I stopped reading. I didn't really enjoy reading anymore. I've never had a good like ear or eye for classics. And so I just kind of quit reading. And then when I was in college doing my history degree, like I said, my writing was not fitting with the academic track that I was on. And I sort of realized that I was not suited to this career I thought I wanted, which was being an academic. And so I started looking elsewhere for I can't be the only person who wants to talk about history this way. So I started looking elsewhere and trying to find other avenues for my interests, and then sort of realized that where it came from was reading children's books and specifically children's historical fiction. And then sort of found a nice little niche there where I could write the things I wanted to write and still be very immersed in historical research and work.
So what's your favorite Star Wars character?
Oh, I...
How do you answer that one?
I mean, like Princess Leia, but Obi-Wan is... It's gotta be Princess Leia. I could go real deep on you and say... Ciri Tachi, who was the heroine alongside Obi-Wan Kenobi of my favorite series of Jedi books when I was a kid. So Ciri Tachi would be like the hardcore answer, but I'm going to say Princess Leia.
There you go. Well, I'm going to be quiet right there. All right. So Bygone Badass Broads 52 Forgotten Women Who Changed the World, the brand new book. What's next for Mackenzie Lee?
What's next? I have a sequel coming out in October to The Gentleman's Guide to Vice and Virtue. It's called The Lady's Guide to Petticoats and Piracy. It fits very well, actually, with Bygone Badass Broads, and some of the research that I did for Bygone Badass Broads ended up sort of bleeding into this next book. It's set in the 1700s. It's about young women having science and piracy adventures across Europe, and they travel and they discover things and have conversations about like womanhood and femininity and what it means to be a woman, both in history and also just sort of in the world. and I hope people like it. I'm excited about it.
Well, there you go. All right, so if I wanted to find out more about Mackenzie Lee, Bygone Badass Broads, your other two books, and eventually the next one coming out, where can I find that information?
So I've got a website, MackenzieLee.com, super easy, except it's Mackenzie, M-A-C-K-E-N-Z-I. There's a thousand ways to spell it. So MackenzieLee.com. You can also find me on all the relevant social medias. I'm mostly the Mackenzie Lee everywhere. So find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram, Google me. I apparently have a Wikipedia page now, I just learned, which I think I've officially arrived because I have a Wikipedia page. So find me on Wikipedia.
That's kind of cool. Did you do anything to that?
No, it just showed up. Somebody like tweeted at me and they were like, I made you a Wikipedia page. Wow. Yeah, it was pretty exciting. It was a good moment for me.
So having a Wikipedia page, can you like change things yourself? Can you like update it?
I have not tried to change my own Wikipedia page, but now I kind of want to.
Yeah.
Make myself look way more impressive than I actually am.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Put a bunch of these women from this book, put their accomplishments in there, and then a line like, and she'd done all this by the time she was 16.
Well, badass, Bygone Badass Broads, 52 Forgotten Women Who Changed the World by Mackenzie Lee. I tell you what, I love the way that Mackenzie tells me these stories in basically her own words through print in Bygone Badass Broads. Mackenzie, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Mackenzie Lee, author of Bygone Badass Broads, 52 Forgotten Women Who Changed the World.
To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.